language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
Ref! I'm sure ref! That's a penalty!
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the ball. That gets a free sting.
Live from the renterswarehouse.com studios, this is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Here's your host, Patrick Creighton. Look in my eyes, what
do you see? This is the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776. It's HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Tyler Scott on the other side of the glass, on the ones, twos, and threes. Get us on Twitter, at PCreighton1, at Producer T. Scott, at ESPN97.5. Let me put my glasses on so I can actually read what the heck's going on around here. Hey, look, I can see you! Who knew? For those of you getting us on the live stream, don't look too close because I just got back from vacation, which means that I am sunburnt to a crisp and I am now somewhere between the second and third stage of the four-stage cycle. I told you, like, I don't tan. I go from white to red, I get leprosy, and I'm white again. Well, right now, I am part red and part going through leprosy. Which, a lot of people think, like, when you're peeling, like, it's gross. Oh, look at that. Like, I'm not a big fan of it. But there's something really weird. And that is, my kids seem to think it's hilarious. They, like, want to peel you. They think this is a great game. I think it's horrible. I'm like, no, go away. But that just makes them want to do it more. You know, and my daughter's 11. She's, like, maniacal about it. She'll, like, come up, like, behind me, like, sneak up on you and, like, try to, like, peel you. I'm like, go away. She's like, no. I'm going to rip the flesh right off your body. My kids are sadistic. I think that's what it is. I think they're sadistic. All right, so there was a, since we actually get to talk Astros here, since they won't be on for the 40 minutes, there was a story that came out over the weekend about the Astros. It was out in the New York Times. The Astros and how good they've been. And that despite all that, they've actually underachieved. Do you feel like the Astros have underachieved? Because I know every time the bullpen has a meltdown, you know, the fans kind of have a meltdown. I think the expectations for the team are extremely high, and the fans' attitudes reflect how high those expectations are. They're defending world champs. People are expecting them to, hey, go right back to the World Series. They think they've got a great shot to be back-to-back World Series champions for the first time in two decades we've had a repeat champion. You know, the last back-to-back title was the Yankees, 98, 99, 2000. It's the last time we've had back-to-back World Series champs. And if you think about this, the Astros went, you know, after the first half of the season, so through 81 games, they had a run differential of plus 173. Now, if you've listened to this show, you know run differential is a stat that I'm big into. I'm big on the run differential. I think that gives you a truer indication of what kind of team you're dealing with, what kind of power on that team, both offensively and pitching defensively, than just regular old wins and losses. You know, I think you kind of identify who's a real contender and who is a pretender, who's doing it with mirrors. When you see one team outscoring their opponents by over 100 runs and another team, you know, is got a winning record, but their run differential is one. And yes, I'm taking a direct shot at the Seattle Mariners there. But the Astros plus 173 run differential at the midway point is a major league record. It is the best run differential at the midpoint since they went to 162 games. The only other teams that have ever had run differentials north of 148. 69 Orioles plus 165. They went to the World Series. They lost to the Miracle Mets. Big Red Machine in 1976 plus 160. 98 Yanks plus 157. 2016 Cubs plus 149. All won the World Series. So that should give you a, you should feel pretty good. Hey, Astros are just dominating. They're scoring a ton of runs. Now I know that, you know, Astros fans are like, well, you know, there's games where they just, they seems like they've got these games where they can't score. And they do. They have those teams where they have those games where they can't score. But here's the funny part about that. So does everybody else. And I know you don't see that because, you know, you're focused on your team. So you see your team every day. You don't see the Red Sox or the Yankees every day. You don't see the Dodgers, the Braves. You don't see those teams every day. Okay, but right now, the Astros have the best run differential in all of baseball. They're plus 188 runs. The Mariners are plus one, and they're five back. The Yankees are plus 130. The Red Sox are plus 167. Not too hard to see where the best teams are. And despite all of that, you feel, maybe Tyler feels, we'll ask him, do you feel like the Astros have underachieved so far? As good as they've been, do you feel they should be better?
I feel like some of those games that they lost that were close, some of the shutouts they probably should have won, but no, I think they're pretty much right where they need to be, or right where they should be.
Yeah, the general manager thinks that they have underachieved a bit. He doesn't like all the double plays they've bounced into. There's been some guys who have gone through some protracted slumps. You know, Marwin Gonzalez has been through multiple protracted slumps. George Springer had a month-long slump. So he looks at it as good as they've been, they should be better. As good as the starting pitching has been, which has been the best in baseball, the bullpen's blown up a couple of times. Think about what this team was a year ago, how good the offense was, and how, you know, no pen, they were using basically starters in the bullpen in the playoffs. And how going into, you know, going down the stretch last year, you know, McCullers was coming off his second trip to the DL. Keuchel was coming off his second trip to the DL. Charlie Morton was coming off the DL. This year, their five starters have made every turn in the rotation. That is incredibly rare. In fact, they're the only team in baseball to use only five starters so far this season. And their starters have the best ERA, the lowest opponent batting average, and the most innings pitched in the league. Now, generally, you want your starters to give you innings. You know, the question becomes, are you concerned about the workload? You know, are you concerned about Lance McCullers' workload? Because you know what, while a lot of people have been trying to look at Justin Verlander's game logs and go, oh, well, you know, this one time he threw 122 pitches and then he didn't pitch so well the next game. You know, but when he threw 118 pitches the next game, he pitched great. So people are trying to look for reasons why Justin Verlander might be human. How about it's a long baseball season and everybody's going to have games where they're human? But they're not looking at is Lance McCullers' last two starts. He's gone 8 1/3 innings. He's given up 11 hits and 10 walks, and he struck out 4 guys. That's a lot of walks and very few missed bats. Now, I'm not worried about, you know, does that necessarily mean he's injured? No, but does it mean that he's starting to hit a wall? Does it mean that they need to back him off a little bit? Because he is a guy who has an injury history. He is a guy who they knew coming into the season, they were going to have to monitor his innings. And it's just so happened, hey, Lance is taking the ball every fifth day. I'm not going to lie, I'm a little surprised that he's been able to take the ball every fifth day. And the fact that McCullers, Morton, and Keuchel have all taken the ball every fifth day is a huge surprise considering their injury histories. This is why Peacock and McHugh are still on the team, are still in the bullpen, because the five guys in the rotation, three of them, have big injury histories, and you expected there would be some issue, but so far, those guys have pitched. Dallas has thrown 130 innings. McCullers has thrown almost 117 innings. That's a lot of innings for those guys. However, there was one really cool thing that AJ noted, and that is they've got a lot of off days in the second half. He said they've only got two starts from the beginning of the second half to the end of August where everybody's on regular rest. They've always got an extra day. So that's a lot of extra day of rest for every single pitcher. Get more into your Houston Astros. Do you feel like they've underachieved as good as they've been? 713-780-3776. Slate Hits.
To the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Do you feel like the Astros should be better than they are? Now, they're pretty damn good. And this isn't to say that they're not. 66 and 36, you're 30 games over 500. You're not 30 games over 500 because you stink. You know, and consider that being 30 games over 500, they're five up in the division over the Mariners, who really just don't score very many runs. And the Mariners are now only three ahead of the Athletics for that essentially second wild card spot. A's have been charging, and they're starting to find the offense. They're also getting their pitching cell down despite the fact that they've got a full rotation of starters on the DL and have for a good portion of the season. You know, when you look at the Astros, do you feel like, you know what? There are guys who are just not doing what you thought they would do. You know, Yuli had the wrist injury right before the season. sapped his power for really the first 3 months of the year. He's only got 6 homers. Now, you hope that that'll go up as the season goes on. But you certainly, I think, you probably expected Yuli Gurriel to have 20 homers or so. What's at 6? You know, Carlos Correa has been out for, a month. Josh Reddick hitting 261. Now, that's up. But, he hit over 300 last year. George is in a month-long slump. He's got some home run and RBI numbers, but 253 in the average. 765 in the OPS. Those aren't George Springer numbers. Marwin's only hitting 236. He's got 37 RBI after leading the team in RBI a year ago. Gattis has slumped back down to 235. His on base is under 300 because he never walks. And those peripheral guys who hit last year, well, really the only peripheral guy who's hitting this year is Tony Kemp. Tony Kemp actually deserves to be in the lineup every day. He's hitting 300. He's hitting 301 if you want to get specific. With a 400 on base. Do you know how many other Astros who have, let's just say, 100 at-bats have a 400 on base? I'll give you 2 seconds to think up that answer. Because it's zero. It's zero. Got an 831 OPS. That's a really solid OPS for a guy who's basically 5'6 and 140 pounds. That's 23 points less in OPS than Jose Altuve. Kemp has shown you he deserves to be in the lineup every day. And I know they brought up Kyle Tucker. They want to give him a shot, but he's hitting 139. And there's no reason for him to be on the roster if he's not going to play, but it seemed like they didn't really need to bring him up. They just did. I think they're going to look, like I said, once they decided they were going to bring Kyle Tucker up, I think they were committed to having him here. The same as they did with Alex Bregman. Remember Bregs got off to that terrible start. Was he 0 for 34 at one point? Bregs got off to a terrible start. Well, Tucker's gotten off to a rough start. He's 5 for 36. That being said, I still think they're going to, I would expect they're going to stick with him and they're going to play him against every righty and lefties that aren't real tough. But Tony Kemp has earned the at-bats because he's produced. The guy's produced at every single level. He's producing again now. And I know George doesn't like the idea of moving out of the leadoff spot, but George might need to be moved out of the leadoff spot. Your leadoff batter has to actually get on base. And with George's power, every time George comes up without a guy on base, it's criminal. And he starts every game like that off. And then he's, he's at the bottom of the lineup. So, the slowest guys on the team are going to bat in front of him. George's on base is 340, and Tony Kemp's on base is 400. George has been scuffling for a month. And, I think about the power numbers that we expect from George. George had a lot of home runs last year. George is a legit 30-plus homer guy. And guys who have, 35 homer power should probably be driving in 105 to 120 runs a year. And he's not going to get the opportunity to drive in 120 runs on the leadoff spot. But he would if he was hitting, let's say, in between Altuve and Correa. I know the splits. I know his numbers. I know he likes hitting in the leadoff spot. But at some point, don't you expect George to you know, grow up a little bit and say, you know what, I'm a power bat and I should be in the middle of the lineup where I can help the team the most? They'll get there eventually. But I like the idea of Tony Kemp being in the lineup every day. I am concerned about the fact Correa still isn't doing any kind of baseball activities. You know, this was supposed to be, it's a stiff back, and he'll be back on the 6th of July. Well, it's the 23rd of July, and he's still not doing anything. That's not a stiff back. You don't have a stiff back for a month. That's something's up, but they're not telling us. And they don't have to tell us, but you don't wake up and go, oh, man, you know, my back's a little stiff. Like, it's just a muscle, a little shake out. You know, you take some muscle relaxers, anti-inflammatories, and, you know, a week later, all right, I feel pretty good. Now it's a month. You didn't wake up with a stiff back, you know, because you slept wrong or, you know, you leaned over. That didn't happen for a month. So I'm concerned about Correa. And the fact that, you know, AJ said he's not going to be back anytime soon, and that was just 2-3 days ago. It went from the 6th to the weekend before the All-Star break to right after the break to he has yet to resume baseball activities. And Hinch telling reporters he's not going to be activated anytime soon. Direct quote. Now, I don't need him to be pushing. Back injuries, you don't need to be pushing a back injury. But it is literally a month, June 26th. You know, and Correa was hitting 268, which is a lower average for him. You'd expect him to hit better. But you see how Correa not being in the lineup does shorten the lineup because the other guys you got to play, well, they don't hit as well as Correa. So should they make a move to address the infield? 713-780-3776 to the Astros. Should the Astros make a move to get insurance for Carlos Correa? Late hits.
ESPN 97.5.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, now understand, when I say this, I'm not saying don't address the bullpen, because I'm not saying that. Saying is that the Astros, in addition to dressing the bullpen, do they need to address insurance for Carlos Correa? You know, when you talk about a back injury, you know, or it's a stiff back, it's going to be out a month, it's going to be out a week. All right, no big deal. You just, you know, sometimes you can sleep wrong and wind up with, you know, with a stiff back and have it take, you know, a week to shake out. But not a month. And well, again, we don't know exactly what is going on with Carlos Correa's back. But if you're out a month because of a back issue, doesn't that sound a little bit more like a structural issue than, you know, I got a stiff back? And if that's the case, then they should investigate insurance for Carlos Correa because, you know, this year, the other guys who would fill in, you know, your Tyler Whites, your J.D. Davis, your Derek Fisher, all those guys have not been good this year. Marwin hasn't been good this year. And it's not like Marwin hasn't gotten at bats. He's got 305 at bats already. But Marwin hasn't been anything close to what Marwin was last season. I mean, consider this. Marwin right now has a six-game hitting streak that has taken his average from 224 to 236. 236. That's terrible. 236, 315 on base, 679 OPS. Those are all numbers that are not starter quality. And again, led the team in RBI last year. Last year was a breakout season for Marwin Gonzalez. It has been a massive regression. And if you want to continue to play Marwin as the super utility guy, where he plays a little third, plays a little second, plays a little first, plays a little short, plays some left field, maybe once in right field, once in a blue moon. If you want to be able to use him in that role, then having him play shortstop every day if something happens to Carlos Correa, he can no longer do that. So should the Astros, in addition to the bullpen, again, we're not saying not go to the bullpen, but there's two things we know the Astros have. They have a lot of money. And they have a lot of prospects. So going out and making deals, Luno's very patient. Going out and making deals, he's not going to overpay, and he's not going to panic. But do they need to make those moves? We know Zach Britton's on their radar. Britton was on the radar last year. They had a deal for him till, you know, ownership for the Orioles, Peter Angelos, said, no, I want more. Well, now they might be in the mix with Britton again. Britton's in the final year of a $12 million deal. He's struggled since he's come off the DL, you know, ruptured Achilles. But that being said, just talked with David Adler, MLB.com, an hour ago. And he was telling me that, you know, over the last couple of weeks, Britton's seen an uptick in velocity on the slider. And the walk rate has gone down because he's walked a ton of guys, walked like 10 guys in 15 innings. He's given him a lot of walks. But he hasn't given up a run in seven outings either. But the big thing being the slider now, little uptick in velocity, fastball, little uptick in velocity. Maybe that means he's coming around after the ruptured Achilles. And it's all about price. You know, what do you get them for? If you can get them relatively cheaply, then, you know, it's a no-brainer. You go out and get guys. If you can get a guy who's had big-time success, I mean, there's been a point in this league where Zach Britton was a top-three closer in baseball before these injuries started climbing into him. If you can get a guy like that for a super discount, go get him. But you talk about, you know, where can you get insurance in case something goes wrong with Carlos Correa's back, and he's not able to give you a whole second half. Maybe you're concerned about his ability to be available the rest of the year. As I said, a month is a long time for a stiff back, and I'm not trying to come off as alarmist, but I'm trying to come off as practical. Because the options that you have to fill that potential insurance need before July 31st and after July 31st are very different. Before July 31st, you know, a guy like Mike Moustakas is going to be available, who's making essentially $6.5 million, plays third base, and he's already got 19 homers and 58 ribs. Now, he doesn't hit a great average. He doesn't walk a ton, but he's got legit power. You know, you get 19 homers and almost 60 RBI. That's an impact bat into this lineup. I'd like him to have a better on base. I like him to hit for a better average. And maybe he will when he's surrounded by more major league quality bats in the Astros lineup than he is in the Royals lineup, because the Royals are an awful baseball team. And we've seen this with other guys that the team's acquired. There's a little bump up in the quality of their performance because they know, hey, I'm playing on a team that has a real chance to win. You might get a little bump up in Moustakas' play because, hey, he's going from being on a team that has no hope, one of the three worst teams in baseball, to going to one of the three best teams in baseball and the defending world champs. Oh, and he's got 19 homers. Guy who played third base. Another option that's available before the 31st might be as Drubal Cabrera, the Mets. Now, Cabrera is, the things I like about Cabrera are that he's position versatile. Cabrera is, can basically play anywhere in the infield. He can play second, he can play short, he can play third, he can play first, play everywhere in the infield. He's hitting 279, he's got 17 homers, he's got 53 ribs, and he's playing on a Mets team that can't score to save their lives, but he still has 53 ribs. A little better on base, 331 on base, 815 OPS. So Cabrera has maybe not as much straight power, but because of the Mets, probably available cheaper. And he's hitting for a better average, and he gets on base a little better. And he's got similar numbers. Plus, you can make the decision at that point. So you go and you get a guy like Moustakas. Moustakas has to play third. So if you were in a situation where Correa was going to be out for a long period of time, you'd have to move Bregman to short and play Moustakas at third. If you get Cabrera, Cabrera could play short, and then you don't have to move Bregman. And the difference being Cabrera right now, unlike Marwin Gonzalez, hitting. Hitting for average, hitting for power. And again, it's the Mets, so chances are they're more than happy to deal because, you know, the Mets are a mess. And there's no other way to explain it. You know, always, you know, say it's not the Mets, it's the mess. They're the New York mess. And if they had a chance to move them, they'd probably do it in a heartbeat. Because right now, it's pretty evident. Jeff Wilpon is calling the shots. And if he can unload salary, he will absolutely unload the salary. Now, Cabrera's making 8.25 this year. It's a walk season. You just saw what they got for Jurys Familia, which was a bag of beans. I don't see any reason why, you know, Cabrera would be a whole lot more than the bag of beans they just got for Familia. Rental player. To me, that's one of those. Cabrera is the kind of guy that gives you everything you want and everything you need and would be obtainable at a favorable price. Plus, he's position flexible. That's one of the things I like about Cabrera. And you know he wants a chance to win. He frustrated as hell, playing in Flushing for the Mets. A guy like Josh Donaldson, who's making over $20 million, that guy you can wait on. That's a guy who'll clear through waivers, and then you could work a deal before August 31st because he's got a massive salary number. And he's got injury concerns. And since he's still not back from injury, they could probably get him through waivers really early in the month because nobody's going to want to pick up that salary as an injury question mark. And then that gives him a couple of weeks to show you that he's healthy before you pull a deal. And Donaldson, of course, a terrific hitter. One of the issues to consider is that he's had a shoulder injury for most of the year. And when he did play, man, that ball didn't have a lot of zip on it getting to first base. He could be DH for this year. Going to need to see what he's got as he gets healthy through the month of August. Coming up next, we're going to talk some UH football as our buddy Joe Duarte of the Houston Chronicle joins us in the next segment. Late hits. Nobody wants it.
Delicious app in the business and the easiest steak you can download. Wait, I think I messed that up.
The most delicious steak in the business and the easiest sports radio app you can download.
Nice.
Yeah, right?
Saltgrass Steakhouse presents the ESPN 97.5 app. Download it today. You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Right, joining us on the hotline right now, it covers UH football for the Houston Chroniclers, our buddy Joe Duarte. Hey, JD, how you doing?
Hey, Nate. Good evening.
Nate's not with me today, buddy.
I'm sorry, who's this?
It's Patrick.
Oh, sorry, man. I apologize.
I know we sound
you
a lot alike.
You guys all sound alike.
Hey, JD, so for the Cougs, we get ready for camp and all that.
Right.
Ed Oliver, recently named by Sports Illustrated top player in the nation. What does that mean for him? And is that something that does that put a little boost, a little extra gas in the tank for him?
Well, what it means for him right now, at least on paper, is that he can put it on his resume. It looks good right now, but he's got a year now to live up to that. And with that, you look down the road, that on paper, that great-looking line on a resume could turn into millions and millions of dollars. We all know Ed Oliver has already said he'll declare after this season. He's being projected as a possible number one pick. So I don't think the target can get much bigger. He did the smart thing and put everything to rest. He won't have to answer that question this season. So now he just basically has to go out and live up to it. He's going to have scouts and NFL personnel scrutinizing every single play this season, looking under the microscope. So, you know, Ed Oliver's his biggest critic, so I don't think this is going to weigh anymore. And if you've watched him play, his motor only knows one speed. So unless you can ramp that knob up and go at an even faster speed, you know, what you've seen from Ed Oliver is what you're going to get again this year.
Now, if Ed has a big season, and not that, you know, he's shown anything to say that he wouldn't, but because he is – now, you know, the defensive guy with the biggest target on his back, he's also the defensive guy with all the cameras pointing at him. Is that something that helps UH because it generates them more attention, especially if Ed continues to play like the best defensive player in the nation?
I mean, look at what Tom Herman did, and he was on the sideline and the attention he brought. So imagine if you have a quality player that plays in a league that's not going to get the coverage if it was the SEC or the Big 12 or the Big 10. But still, Houston has several Thursday games that are prime time. They'll have, I believe, one or two Saturday games that fit that time slot. He's going to get seen on a lot of television sets this year. But having a guy like that for this program that's really a fringe Power Five. I mean, if you look at Houston and you compare them to the Group of Five, they're in that next two or three schools that if conferences finally decide that, hey, we're serious and we're going to add, Houston's going to get a bit. But for now, as a non-Power Five, any attention that Ed Oliver brings, whether it's Heisman Trophy consideration, Outland, Nagurski, all those awards, It's gonna resonate with the program and really give it an additional boost to what it already has from the last few years of being one of the more consistent non-Power Five programs.
Joe Duarte, Houston Chronicle, covers the Cougars with us on the hotline. JD, you know, one of the issues that I think the Cougs have dealt with is the depth. You know, if you're at Alabama, you've got five-star guys behind five-star guys behind five-star guys. When you play in the American, you just don't have that kind of depth. But they got Nick Watkins as a grad transfer coming in from Notre Dame. They've got Quentin Dormady as a transfer in from Tennessee. What do you expect from those two guys? And, you know, are there other guys that you're seeing – who came into the team this year that could play significant roles.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, what Major Applewhite has had to do is what they don't get in recruiting, they kind of get on that secondary market. They get guys that have played at Power Five programs that, for whatever reason, either want to transfer closer to home in Texas, want more playing time, have graduated, and want to finish their career elsewhere. So they have the ability to be selective, and as does Houston. So when it came down and you had your checklist and your wish list this year, Major Applewhite went down the list, and Houston badly needed a running back. They got one in Terrence Williams from Baylor. They needed some experience in the quarterback room. They got Quentin Dormady from Tennessee. They really needed help in the secondary, and they go out and get Deontay Anderson from Ole Miss, who finally got his waiver from the NCAA. And then they added Nick Watkins, who you mentioned, from Notre Dame, so you check that off. And then 2 years ago, Isaiah Chambers from TCU sat out last year so he could play this year on the defensive line next to Ed Oliver. So you go down the list, and they got a receiver from Utah. What they've done is they've been able to fill some much-needed holes. Now, some of these guys are one-and-dones. A couple of them will have multiple years of eligibility. So when it comes down to it and you're at a program like Houston and you have to fill the roster numbers and you got to get that depth, you got to look at other places, whether it's the JUCO market or these transfers. And I think Houston's done an incredible job in the last 6 to 8 months of getting those guys into the program.
Now, Jerry, I think Major is a guy who's highly respected, you know, at the university and in college football. But when he took the job, you know, Tillman Fertitta made it pretty clear, you know, the expectation is conference championships. And, well, they were 7-5 last year. They made a very controversial decision to bring in Kendall Briles as the offensive coordinator. And that has not sat well with a lot of people, considering everything that went on at Baylor. Is Major basically coaching for his job this year?
I don't know if it's soon enough to say that, but I will tell you the moves he has made shows of someone that knows that hey, the honeymoon's over, and this needs to be a program that's in that 9-10 win or more a season range. And clearly the offense needed fixing, and it needed – I mean, it was so predictable. It's flat-out been boring at times. And he went out and you know, whether you like the name or the affiliation with Baylor, he went out and got one of the guys who was part of that explosive, spread offenses at Baylor, and Kendall Briles and Lane Kiffin together at Florida Atlantic last year put up some huge numbers there. So, yes, I think, you know, going into the second full season, you know, Major, the writing's on the wall. You know, he's got, I think if we were at this point next year and he was coming off of back-to-back years that were subpar, you could make that argument. But I think that this was kind of the year where he knew he needed to at least give something a try offensively, because, you know, this is the last year for Ed Oliver. And if Ed Oliver leaves and having never won a conference championship or even gone to a New Year's Six Bowl, that's going to be a huge disappointment for a program that had the best player on the defensive side. All that was missing was an offense that could, you know, generate some points. So this will be a telling year for Major. Don't think it's the end all for him, but he's going to need to do something this year.
Joe Duarte covers the Houston Cougars for the Houston Chronicle with us on the hotline. JD, what is your, early expectation for this team?
Well, I think we find out really soon into the season. You know, they play Arizona and Texas Tech back-to-back weeks. Khalil Tate, one of the best offensive players in the country. Then you got Texas Tech on the road, and that's not usually an easy place to play. So I think at this point in the year, if Houston splits both, I think that sets them up well, because if the American Conference schedule outside of playing at Memphis and at Navy, there's just not a lot there. They can't have those slip-ups like they did last year at Tulane and Tulsa on the road, or a couple years ago with SMU. If they can get through that September stretch and win both, it could be a really nice, you know, straight shot to that last game of the year against Memphis to decide who goes to the conference championship game. But this is a schedule that sets up that I think Houston is a 9 or more win team this year. But they, again, they can't have those slip-ups like they did last year. And they're going to have to beat, you know, one or both in Navy or Memphis as well.
JD, just X's and O's here. You know, I'm not going to get into all that other stuff with our brows. We've talked about that ad nauseum before. But X's and O's wise, what do you think for Derek King in that offense?
I think he fits well. I think ultimately this is a guy that's waited his turn, and he's taken the same path as Greg Ward Jr. did a couple of years ago. And in fact, they have a couple of guys waiting in the wings that will take the similar path as Greg Ward and Derek. But from a pure talent standpoint, we saw what he could do in 4 games. He led that big comeback at South Florida when they were ranked. I think this guy fits what they want to do. And then if you look to the future, guys like Clayton Tune, those guys, those are more of the prototypical quarterback for that system. But I really think they're going to find a way this year to really use and maximize Derek King's potential, because he has a lot of it. And with what they have coming back on the offensive line and then a true running back, he could be really dangerous in this offense. And his arm, I know you said don't get the X and O's. His arm, I believe, is underrated. It was the same as Greg Ward. People didn't think Greg Ward could run. They thought he would pass. They thought he just ran. The same thing with Derek. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think he's going to fit in well with this offense.
Joseph Duarte covers Houston Cougars for the Houston Chronicle with us on the hotline. You can get him on Twitter at Joseph_Duarte. JD, always a pleasure, buddy. Appreciate it.
Hey, for my mess up, we don't need Patrick to come back. You're the guy from now on.
All right, we're good.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Joe Duarte with us on the hotline. I'll have to tell Nate that he says hello. You know, when you work with the same guy for 5 years, people are just used to him being there with you. You know, Nate and I have been together 5 years. We still work together on Sunday afternoons. And, you know, Joe's been with us for 5 years. He's used to Nate and I working together. All right, we will get into the Houston Rockets and what appear to be inevitabilities next.
ESPN 97.5.